Tonight I want to talk about kindness. And specifically, kindness as a practice. It is an integral part of the Eightfold Path and of all Buddhist Dharma. It can be misunderstood, and it's often practiced with a fuzzy intention, or not at all. It's in the second fold of the Eightfold Path. The first one is wise understanding, which can be boiled down to understanding that it's about suffering, what causes it, and how to end it. And so the second fold is this wise intention to end it. And at the very least, not to contribute to its proliferation. This is usually summed up as non-harming. In practice, it's going about our lives with this intention to lessen the suffering of all beings, particularly by not contributing to it. In the Eightfold Path, wise intention, kindness, is followed by three areas of ethical practice and then three areas of mind training. And that's it. You've got your eight folds. All of these six steps that follow wise intention, in fact, flow from it, are aimed at guarding the well-being of all beings, you and all others. When he was asked once to explain his religion, the Dalai Lama replied, "My religion is simple. My religion is kindness." I have a photo of him with this quote on the wall of my bedroom, right above the light switch, so that I begin and end all of my days looking at this. The words are inspiring, but so is his smile, which is often what sinks into my heart when I look at that. Several years ago, I was in a crowd of thousands who took a 3-day course from His Holiness. On the first day, he kind of escaped his bodyguards and walked over to the edge of the stage. And he spent a long time there, looking, smiling, and bowing toward everyone in the crowd. You couldn't help but absorb his powerful goodwill personally. It was one of the most moving moments of my life, which explains the presence of the picture there. Kindness is expressed in our actions when we help someone or give something. There's a story by an unknown author called The Wise Woman's Stone, which I'd like to share with you. She was traveling in the mountains and found a precious stone in a stream. The next day, she met another traveler who was hungry, and the wise woman opened her bag to share her food. The hungry traveler saw the precious stone and asked the woman to give it to him. She did so without hesitation. The traveler left, rejoicing in his good fortune. He knew the stone was worth enough to give him security for his lifetime. But a few days later, he came back to return the stone to the wise woman. "I've been thinking," he said. "I know how valuable this stone is, but I give it back in the hope that you can give me something even more precious. Give me what you have within you that enabled you to give me that stone. So kindness is really much more than the quality of our actions, although it's definitely that. It is a capacity of the heart, an attitude. And if we practice it, it can become an overarching intention that guides all our actions. Do we need to encounter this woman to acquire it? We have the Dharma and our practice to help us develop it. Like all the other goodies that we get from Buddhist practice, kindness is something we can cultivate over time. First, we need to understand why it's good for us. In that story about the woman with the stone, it seemed like that woman lost a lot. She gave away lifelong security to a greedy stranger. She had given him what he needed. She had eased the pain of his hunger, but he wanted more. So perhaps if we can appreciate the depth of her wisdom, we can understand the profound nature of kindness. Let's start with the fact that kindness is not just concerned with helping others. It is something that we practice for our own benefit. I remember I said initially that it's for the benefit of all beings. Definitely good for us to practice kindness. As Ralph Waldo Emerson said, it is one of the most beautiful compensations of this life that no one can sincerely try to help another being without helping oneself. Why? Because self-centeredness is an express train to suffering. It is the mental posture that leads to clinging and aversion. It is in itself roughly equivalent to delusion. And these are the three causes of suffering. And its equivalency to delusion is because no one of us is really all that much. You know, we're just a part of it all. We are utterly dependent on everything else that exists for our own existence. If there weren't air, if there weren't food, if there weren't a social structure, if there weren't other beings, we wouldn't be here. So the best antidote for an overblown idea of our own importance, self-absorption, is concern for others. It gets us out of ourselves. It opens our hearts. It loosens our fingers on whatever we cling to and lets us face whatever we fear or hate or resent. That's why this Sangha, like most, puts out a Dana basket for you to work with this vital practice whenever you come here. Let me emphasize that the benefit we receive is not getting the gem back from the stranger. It's a spiritual benefit on an entirely different plane than that of material gain. Now, if we regard the whole world with the intention to end suffering, it can feel overwhelming. You know, where do we start when there's so much need for help? And which beings do we help when their hearts and minds are often as tangled as that greedy stranger who asked for so much more when he had already been given what he needed? To To address that first question, I'll quote Edward Everett Hale, the minister and 19th century author, who said, "I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do something I can do." That's a lovely way of putting what I've often shortened into "do what's in front of you" or "do the best you can." Yes, we are limited, but we can do wonderful things within those limitations. To get just a little personal, I am very grateful for the opportunities I get as a teacher to help people. Over the years, I've counseled people plagued by painful illnesses or crippling mental conditions. I am only one of many who work to help them. And just a few days ago, someone listed all the people who had helped to bring comfort. I was really pleased that the Dharma I had shared with this person put me on that list. It's a wonderful feeling to think that you've truly helped. Kindness, though, doesn't require results in order to work its spiritual healing in your heart. The key is willingness, that intention to be kind. Remember, Emerson said, it's sincerely trying to help. That's all it requires. If you can actually help, that's a bonus. Remember, all the Dalai Lama did that day was smile and bow. And my heart received a marvelous gift. Often we assert kindness best when we refrain from conduct or speech. This is the perfection or parami of patience. The suttas have a lot to say about maintaining goodwill toward those who behave badly toward us. It's called forbearance under insult. It's a form of patience. There is a sutta in which the Buddha advised that when people are unkind to us, we keep regarding these people with an awareness imbued with goodwill. And beginning with them, we will keep regarding the all-encompassing world with an awareness imbued with goodwill. So we start with these difficult people, and the next thing you know, we really can have that intention for the benefit of all beings. Is this a tall order of altruism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not so much, really. In discussing this sutta, Tanissaro Bhikkhu, or Tan Jeff, explained that if you can expand your heart and mind like this, when you're otherwise inclined to ill will, then what's been done to you doesn't seem so overwhelming. You're also less likely to react out of hatred, which would prolong the suffering that hatred causes. Karma. Tanjeff says, you provide protection, both for yourself and for others, against any unskillful things you otherwise might be tempted to do. Now, definitely, it can be hard to start practicing goodwill and kindness when someone's just punched you or cut you off on the freeway. So I urge you to find spaces in your day when you can practice at a lower wattage of psychic energy, when things are a little more calm than when you've just been attacked. One example would be a grocery store. As you enter the store, set the intention that you will be as helpful as you can be to everyone you encounter. Then, see how it goes. Yes, there will be moments when people irritate you, especially here in the San Francisco area where property costs are such that grocery stores have such narrow aisles that it takes real cooperation for two carts to pass each other. Except that your mental habit may be inclined toward resentment. And remember that you're making this effort in order to change it gradually. In fact, as you go through the store, notice your mind's way of thinking about the people you see. Do you critique their fashion choices? Or their parenting techniques? Or the way that they leave their cart in the middle of the aisle and wander off looking for something else? Feel your body respond to these thoughts. Notice yourself getting uptight. Then, when you get to that long checkout line, close your eyes. Take a couple of deep breaths. And set the intention to find something kind to think about everyone you see when you open your eyes again. Maybe you like the color of their very strange headscarf. Maybe you notice they have a nice smile. Whatever it is, just look for something that you can have a kind thought about and just give it a try. See how it goes. If it doesn't go well, then keep practicing. I do this both in grocery stores and when I'm driving. I've been doing it for over 24 years now. It can be a psychic workout. But over the years, progress has been made. Now, please notice that so far, I have not talked about loving kindness, although I am talking about metta. For many years, I have agreed with what Tanisaro Bhikkhu says, that this translation of metta is misleading. It rolls off the tongue, it's nice to say, gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling, but the term loving kindness can imply that we're supposed to love everyone equally. And this gets really confusing. First, our word love is so badly misunderstood and abused. It's usually mixed up with many forms of self-interest. I'll treat you well if you treat me well. You are my fill-in-the-blank. There's a lot of self in a lot of the ways we love. Plus, there are a lot of people that we could have goodwill toward that we're just not going to love. And there's no reason to push ourselves too far. So goodwill, or kind goodwill, but just goodwill will do, is much closer to the intention of non-harming in the Eightfold Path. Tanjeff says, goodwill is an attitude you can express for everyone without fear of being hypocritical or unrealistic. It recognizes that people will become truly happy, not as a result of your caring for them, but as a result of their own skillful actions. And right here I want to put an asterisk. Remember the woman with the precious stone. But moving on. Yes, we need to have the open-heartedness to avoid reacting harshly when people are unkind to us. And that doesn't mean that we have to love them. A sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya offers a phrase as a metta practice. When you're supposed to contemplate beings such as snakes, scorpions, and nasty human beings, and mentally say, may these beings, free from animosity, free from oppression, and free from trouble, look after themselves with ease. And this looking after themselves is the skillful action that will free them from suffering. It will, as a lucky aside, make them less awful beings. If they have cultivated in their own hearts enough goodwill that they're no longer quite so nasty. So let's go back to that wise woman in the story. Are you beginning to see why she gave away that precious gem to a greedy stranger? I'll give you a little more Dharma to help you out. The Karaniya Metta Sutta says that when you practice goodwill, you want to protect it in the same way that a mother would protect her only child. It says, as a mother would risk her life to protect her child, her only child, even so should one cultivate a limitless heart with regard to all beings. And not to be redundant, but Tanjeff emphasizes that this does not mean that we must treat all beings as if they're our only child. It means we should cultivate and protect our goodwill as we would protect our only child. When we practice kindness, we do so truly for the benefit of all beings. Take care of yourself through your practice, and you will want to take care of this all-encompassing world as well as you can. The wise woman and the gem, perhaps she realized that giving it to that stranger would awaken him to the self-harming nature of his greed, finally open his heart, and liberate him from suffering. Or maybe it was just to protect her own goodwill, which she knew was more precious than that gem. And maybe she was just doing the best she could. Thank you.